What's up, Dream Warriors? Welcome back to another episode of a podcast on Elm Street. We are your hosts, Mark.
And Brooke.
And this week we're coming at you with Brooke's pick and another childhood trauma movie. And you chose E.T. the Extraterrestrial from 1982.
Yes. Hoping that you would say it in E.T.'s voice, but
E.T.,
all is
E.T.
forgiven.
I don't know if I could do
E.T. Oh
that.
no.
Nailed it. This is our second time recording this section because you had to step away, and then in the meantime, my laptop fucking died. So here we are again.
Great podcasting.
Yes, yeah, fucking 101. Plug your laptops in.
Yep.
But anyways, you'd previously mentioned you hadn't watched this since you were a kid.
Yep.
You've avoided it.
Yep.
I'll just recap. You watched it tonight with your family.
Yeah, because between I got home at like 6 o'clock and then sushi got home, I just went downstairs immediately because I needed to watch this, and then we just had like leftover pizza, so super quick. So I was like, well, I got to eat and watch at the same time. So, you guys want to watch this with me and watch the whole thing? Theo watched the
Nice.
whole thing and wasn't scared. I was surprised.
That's good.
So, yeah.
So he's less of a pussy than his dad, is what you're saying.
Yes. Even like Bettina, like when it got to the part,
Yeah.
it's like, this is the part that like I was scared of as a kid. And then I texted my sister and mom. And I was like, yeah. We watched E.T. tonight. Theo watched the whole thing. My sister was like, what? Like, even I was scared as a kid watching that. So,
That's funny.
yeah.
Three of mine watched the first half with me.
Okay.
Because yeah, I started it, what's tonight? Thursday. So I started Tuesday night. And yeah, Lila, Logan, and Hunter just fucking laid down and chilled with me. They watched the first half. They were pretty into it, so I may toss it on again in the near future and
Yeah, I
have
mean,
them
like,
watch the
I
whole
feel
thing.
like after watching this, like, as a Spielberg has that, like, just magical touch that's like they're kids' movies, but like they're also like, I don't know, like family oriented kind of.
Yeah, like they're tailored for families for the most part, but they just almost cross that line.
Yeah, and like, even like, the movie we'll cover in a few weeks, like Raiders, like,
Yeah.
yeah, it's like an adult movie, but it just has that like family feel to it.
Yeah. Even like Jurassic Park. Like Jurassic Park can be scary as fuck, but like kids love it. And like we watched it when we were little, so. But anyways, yeah, before we swoon over Spielberg too much, we'll kick off our news and booze. What are you drinking tonight?
So I did buy regular beers
Okay.
for our golf trip,
Right.
but I also bought some Tall Boy Coors Light to
Oh my
have.
God, okay.
And I wasn't gonna have the regular beers, but I mean, our boy ET drinks the Coors, so I had to have a
That's
Coors
all right, that's fair. I'll give you that.
Light.
I'll give you that. I'm into the Collective Arts Citrus Gin Collins again tonight.
Nice.
Yeah, I wasn't feeling a beer. What's your last four watched?
So last four watched. I've been kind of doing this thing. So my one Discord I'm in, one of the pages, I forget what they're called on Discord, but one of like the pages is they have the podcast is Real Talk, and they have the Real Talk challenge that they did. They do every year. It's like every week, like they have a different kind of like theme for that week.
Okay.
And I thought you had to join it like from day one. And then one guy this week was like, well, I'm gonna join it. And it's like week 35 or whatever. So I'm
Oh.
like, fuck it. Like, I'll join it with you and just see if I can complete it. So
Yeah.
the first week was watch the most popular movie from last year that you haven't seen yet.
Okay.
And unfortunately for me, that movie was Wicked for Good.
Yeah.
Now, I hadn't seen Wicked, so I'm like, God damn it, I gotta watch Wicked. So Wicked's like almost 3 hours long. I was like, oh my God. But anyway, so I watched Wicked and Wicked for Good. Honestly, very surprised. I liked Wicked slightly more than Wicked for Good. I don't know. I like musicals for the most part. I didn't think I'd like this, but I don't know, just something about it. Like, I'm not like the biggest Wizard of Oz fan, but I do enjoy it. So it was kind of cool to see that kind of world again. And
Yeah.
I think like Cynthia Erivo or Riva, whatever her name is, and
Ariana Grande.
Ariana Grande, I think, are good. And yeah, so watch that.
Nice.
Watched a Mulholland Drive for the first time.
Yeah.
Crazy movie. It's only my second David Lynch movie I've ever seen. So,
Okay.
yeah. And then watched one of the themes was watch a movie directed by a prominent actor. So I watched A Bronx Tale,
Okay.
directed by Robert De Niro.
Yep.
Never seen it before. Really good. I'm surprised this is the only movie that he's really directed. I mean, he's probably acting so much, has no play, no fucking time to do
Yeah,
it.
it's true. Was he in it too?
He was,
Yeah,
yes.
okay. I've
Yeah,
never
yeah.
seen it either, so.
It's good, it's good. Although like the version that they had on one of the streaming services I had wasn't that great, to be
Okay.
honest. Like a lot of the audio was cut out and it just was cut very weird together.
Okay.
So watched Notting Hill. That was the first watch for me. And then I watched Return to Silent Hill from this year and just so bad. Like,
Yeah, man.
and I was saying to you, like, I don't know what it is about up here, but we have a streaming service called Crave, which has like HBO and stuff. And for some reason, they have movies in French and only French language.
Yeah.
So I start the movie, I get through the open, and then they start talking. I'm like, oh, God damn it. So I try to switch to English, and it's like, no English. So I'm like, God damn, I'm gonna have to fucking pay $5 to rent this thing. Whenever I'm paying for the streaming service,
Yeah, I know it's
it's
annoying.
so frustrating.
Yeah.
Anyway, terrible movie. Was kind of cool to see like it played out because I just played Silent Hill 2 for the first time
Okay.
last year, so it was kind of cool to see how they did it,
Yeah.
but not great.
I watched Pinocchio Unstrung, which is
Oh.
a new one from the Pooniverse, I guess.
Yeah.
I actually had a really good time with it. I
Yeah.
think they're getting a little bit better with these movies.
Isn't there not like a big actor, but isn't there someone known, well known in that
Well,
one?
yeah, Richard Brake's in it,
Yeah,
and
okay.
Robert Englund plays Jiminy Cricket.
That's
Yeah,
amazing.
yeah. But yeah,
What's
I.
like the premise of it?
Same kind of thing. So Brake plays Geppetto,
Okay.
and he. There's something like they find, like, there's this, like, enchanted wood kind of thing that, like, is growing in his basement.
Yeah.
And he makes Pinocchio with that. So, like, there's no, like, fairy godmother or anything like that, or the
Yeah.
angel that comes down, I mean. So Pinocchio is just kind of alive, and Geppetto's grandson is living with him. And him and Pinocchio become friends, but Pinocchio wants to be a real boy so bad that he, like, latches onto him and just,
Yeah.
like, I'm gonna do everything to protect you because family protects each other and stuff like that. And it's just, some of the kills are fucking brutal, man. Like, there's this one scene in a gym. I'm not gonna say what happens, but I was just like, holy fuck, man. But yeah, I
All right.
definitely recommend checking it out. And then I watch Harvey, which is One that I've almost bought on Grove multiple times, the
Does it
physical
say
copy.
1950?
1950, yeah.
Damn.
It has James Stewart in it, and it was really good.
Okay.
I think I definitely will buy the 4K of this one.
I'm gonna add that to my watch list. I've never heard of it before.
Yeah, no, it's really good.
And I like me some James Stewart.
Oh man, he was so good in this movie. Me and the kids watched Tarzan one morning, and then I watched Passenger, which is another new one that came out this year. It gets a lot of hate. I kind of enjoyed it a little bit.
Okay.
It almost felt like a Sinister on the open highway kind of feeling.
Yeah.
And then randomly watched Queen of the Damned because we were talking about it at work and I hadn't seen it in forever, and I remember how iconic the soundtrack was, and yeah, just a good time movie. Plus Aaliyah is amazing as can't remember what her name is, Akasha.
Yeah, I've never seen it before. I've
Yeah,
always seen like the cover like at the video store and stuff, but
that's good. All right, for the news, unfortunately, there's no good news.
oof.
I mean, there probably could be if I dug deep, but
Yeah,
we'll focus on,
it's been a rough week.
like week and a half almost. We lost three legends and a hero in the past week and a half.
Yeah.
So we lost Hayden Panettiere last week.
Yeah.
And then this week we lost Dolly Parton, Tim Curry, and then fucking today, Peter Cullen's passed away.
That, I didn't even know he was Canadian.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he voiced Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh and Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
He had some really big voice acting names.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just seemed like almost every fucking day this week there was an
Yeah.
announcement of somebody else. It's like,
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Can you hear my washing machine?
No.
Okay, because it's going ham behind me right now. Just like, holy fuck.
No, I
It's in its
can't.
spin cycle.
Oh yeah, okay.
But yeah, sad week. Lost a lot of legends this week.
Yeah.
But anyways, what do we have for 4Ks?
4Ks. 4Ks, we got Anti-Mame. Not sure what that is. We got Are You There, Gar? Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. We got She Rides Shotgun by Taron Egerton.
Man, he looks
Never heard of
sick
it.
with no hair.
Yeah, he does. Same look
Looks
as
bad.
Apex.
Right. Oh, yeah,
Yeah.
true. Yeah.
Star Wars, The Mandalorian and Grogu. Disclosure Day. Spielberg. I gotta pick that up. I gotta watch that. I got Practical Magic. We got the Fast and the Furious 25th anniversary.
That makes me want to puke in my mouth.
And
Fucking Jesus.
we got United 93. The War Wagon. We got Steelbook of Fast and the Furious.
That's sick Steelbook.
Yeah, it is, yeah. We got The Saint with our boy Val Kilmer. Enemy at the Gates. RZA's One Spoon of Chocolate. No
Right.
idea what that is. P.O. Box Tinto Brass. Sure. The Stuntman. We got Your Name, Steelbook, Identity. We got Little Odessa on Criterion and Harlan County, USA on Criterion as well.
Hey, it's a lot this
So,
week.
yeah, there's, yeah.
Yeah, we were at Walmart last night, and of course I went to the movie section, and I was actually impressed what they had for 4Ks. Like they had Disclosure Day, they had Project Hail Mary, Scream 7. Like they had a bunch of like really new movies on 4K. I was kind of
Okay.
surprised because usually Walmart shit up here for movie selections.
Yeah.
But I didn't buy any. I'll wait for a Grove sale because I've spent too much money on movies lately.
Agreed.
All right, you ready to dive in?
Yes, sir.
Okay, like we said in the intro, this week we're talking about E.T. from 1982, starting off the synopsis. A troubled child summons the courage to help a friendly alien escape from Earth and return to his home planet. We've already mentioned it, but this was directed by the one and only Steven Spielberg, who needs no introduction, but I mean, he's done movies like
No.
Jaws, Close Encounters, Indiana Jones, Jurassic Park, Schindler's List. Like he's an okay director, I guess.
Yeah.
Doesn't
Yeah.
have a lot of big movies, but
No.
for our cast, we have Henry Thomas, who plays Elliot, Dee Wallace playing Mary, Drew Barrymore playing Gertie, Robert McNaughton playing Michael, and then I have three honorable mentions. I'll let you go if you have any.
I mean, not really. I mean, C. Thomas Howell, he was in The Outsiders as Pony Boy Curtis. There's a couple other recognizable people, but yeah, I mean, who do you got?
I have Peter Coyote, who played Keyes, so like
Okay.
the good scientist, I guess, that was kind of trying to help Elliot out at the end. He was in A Walk to Remember, Erin Brockovich, Patch Adams, just kind of a run in the late 90s, early 2000s. And then I have Erica Alienak. The only reason why I have her, she played Pretty Girl. So she was the girl in Elliot's school that he kisses.
Oh yeah.
I was like, why does this girl look so fucking
She did look
familiar?
kind of familiar.
She played the stripper in Under Siege.
Oh my God.
And then,
That's great.
yeah. And then lastly, I have Pat Welsh, who I don't know who she is. I'm assuming you don't know who she is, because this is the only thing that she really did. She was, I think, in her 80s or 90s, and she smoked two packs of cigarettes a day. And because of that, it made her voice perfect for E.T.
Interesting.
Yeah. She had no real acting credits to her name whatsoever. Somehow they found this woman and they were like, hey, you're going to voice an alien in our new movie.
That's great.
I just thought that she should get her flowers.
Yeah, that's why I shout out as well. The creator of E.T. was special effects guy Carlo Rambaldi, who also worked on Possession from 81. He worked on Alien. He did the head effects in Alien, so Close Encounters. What else? Deep Red. So, a few good movies.
Yeah, because like E.T. was great as like the
Yeah.
puppetry.
Silver Bullet. I haven't watched that movie, but he was the werewolf suit creator.
Damn.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
He's got some good credits.
Yeah.
But yeah, like E.T., well, it was a suit, and there was a man in there that was 2 foot 10.
Really?
Yeah. And there was one scene, I can't remember. I think it was the kitchen scene where they actually had a child in there, but otherwise it was this man who was 2 foot 10 and he was inside the suit. But like I think he was just like doing the walking around.
Yeah,
But like
because I read here that young Drew Barrymore thought that the animatronic puppet was actually alive. And I guess the crew kept the mechanics running between takes so she could talk to him and feed him snacks.
God, she's so adorable in this movie too,
Yeah,
man.
she is, yeah.
That's funny. Well, not ironic. I did it on purpose, but I started watching Firestarter tonight, which
Oh, is
is
she in that?
it came out 2 years after this, and I'd never
Oh,
seen it
okay.
before, but I
Yeah, I haven't
wanted to
seen it either.
see another one of her child acting credits to see if this was just like a one-off or if she actually was really good as a child actor. And like, I mean,
Yeah.
she's kind of crushing it in Firestarter, so
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
she did really good.
Nice.
But yeah, do you have anything else?
No. I think I'll do this episode a bit differently. I don't know if we'll go scene by scene on this one.
Okay.
They will just talk about a few scenes and just, yeah, talk about this movie a bit.
All right.
It's a pretty iconic movie. You know, everyone adores this movie. You know, one of the best sci-fi coming of age movies, you know, of all time. So what'd you think of the ET, like of the way he looked and acted? I know we touched on it a bit, but like,
I think it's really creative because, like, throughout the history of cinema, we generally have one, well, up until like more of a modern time, but like, they kind of had a vision of what an alien looked like. And they were like the tall, slender, big round head, and like just a stereotypical alien. And then, like, in this one, they started to get a little bit more creative with it. Well, a lot more creative with it. And like, we just have this little pork ball with a fucking football shaped head, and he walks around normal with his neck really short, and like, he has no neck, and then he can extend it up. And like, I don't know, there's a lot of creativity with it because like, his heart will glow, and like, that will signal that he's happy or he's healing something. And then like, his finger, he's got the fingertip that glows. Like, he can just do a lot of stuff, and he's got like the telekinesis and everything. So I think it was just a really creative design for a character.
Yeah, because it's kind of similar, like Close Encounters came out like 5 years before this, and you don't really see the aliens in that, but like when you do see the aliens at the end, like a little bit, they're like also very small, if I remember correctly, and kind of short and not like your typical looking aliens. And like I always thought, like what I remember, the ET was this fucking creepy little dude, but like really the like creepy thing about him was his fucking fingers. Like the way at the beginning they would just like creep his fingers in, like very like Close Encounters, like Signs kind of ish, you know?
Yeah, like wraps them around the door frames and stuff.
And just like Spielberg uses like lighting and shadows like very well, like introducing ET to us.
I really like the connection, and it's like a physical connection that Elliot and ET have as the movie progresses. And you start to see it a little bit. And then I think the big reveal of it all is whenever ET's home alone and Elliot's at school. And like how you mentioned earlier, ET's cracking open all these Coors cans and getting fucking plastered. And then Elliot's getting plastered at school. And it's just like, oh my God, like they have this like very solid physical connection where ET or where Elliot can feel ET's feelings and like kind of vice versa.
So do you think, because they were dissecting, or they're about to dissect frogs or whatever in their class, so do you think that ET could sense them trapping the frogs in the glasses, and that's an ET told Elliot to free them all?
I don't know if it was that or if it was Elliot sees the frogs kind of as ET because they're bringing these frogs into this classroom, which is like an alien planet for these frogs, and they're trapping them to
And
do
drugging
tests
them.
on and drugging them to do tests on them and stuff, which is what humans would do with aliens that kind of end up here.
Because he's watching TV and there's like a woman like dancing or something like that, and he like recreates that kiss with the girl that you mentioned. But I like haven't seen this in like 30 years, so like obviously I've seen like clips and stuff like over the years, and obviously pictures and all that, so it's a pretty memorable movie, but like I forgot like how ET got there. Like I didn't remember there being other ETs that just like fucking leave him because he wandered off too much, and then all like the government people who don't really see at all or like not really know their names, they're kind of like creeping around and trying to investigate and stuff like that.
So, touching on the other aliens, do you think, well, no, they do say it at the end that they didn't intentionally leave him there, but like, do you think that they assumed he was just on the ship? Or do you think they're
No, I
like, you
think,
know what, if you're gonna wander off, we're just gonna fucking peace out?
well, because he was kind of wandered away, and then they were like signaling to him because he was had his like stomach glowing, and
Oh,
he
that's true.
was trying to get back to the ship, and he saw the one alien like waiting by the door,
That's
but then
true.
like everyone came, so he's like, well, fuck, we can't wait, we're gonna get caught, so they fucking book it. So I guess the inspiration for E.T.'s face was obviously modeled by the designer I mentioned, using a mix of Albert Einstein, poet Carl Sandburg, Ernest Hemingway, and a pug dog.
Okay, then. That's quite the mashup.
Yeah, which, I mean, I don't know what Carl Sandburg or Ernest. I kind of know what Ernest Hemingway looks a bit, but like I could see Albert Einstein a little bit. And obviously a pug with all the fucking wrinkles on his face and stuff.
Well, and you said that Theo thought he looked like a turtle, or he was a turtle.
Yeah, as soon as like he showed up, he was just like turtle. I was like, that was a way better response than I thought I was gonna get.
I know, because like the kids came in because I was watching in our bed,
Yeah.
because Brady was playing the PlayStation in the living room, so I was like, fuck it, I'm just gonna go lay in our bed. And then Hunter came in first, and I've talked about him with his very active imagination. He will think things are real when they're not. He'll get nightmares over some stuff, but so I asked him, I said, do you think he's scary looking? And he said, no, I think he's kind of cute. I said, okay, so like if you watch this with me, you're not going to get nightmares tonight. He said, no, why would I get nightmares? I'm just like, all right, dude, like I asked twice, so.
Nice.
But yeah, I don't know. The kids enjoy the look of them, I guess.
So yeah, he finds ET like in the shed, and all their families there, like his brother Mike, I think, and then his sister Gertie. His mom's basically a single mom. Their dad fled to Mexico, I guess.
Such a random fucking side plot.
I know, because I asked Bettina, I was like, so I guess like she's just a single mother, and she's like, yeah, she looks like she has like five kids, like just running around. I'm like, I wonder where the dad is, and then like the next scene, it's like, oh yeah, my dad went to Mexico. It's like, so he finds ET, and then he lures him with Reese's Pieces, and so apparently, Elliot was originally supposed to lure ET with M&Ms. But Mars Inc. refused the request, so they used Reese's Pieces, which led to a massive 65% surge in sales for the candy.
Big fail on Mars. Yeah, because they said that Mars said that they thought it would decrease sales, and it did the exact opposite.
I mean, it's a sci-fi movie with an alien. And your brand is called Mars.
Yeah, it's kind of a
Yeah.
no-brainer.
Oh, like, yeah. So obviously, this is like kind of like a kid's family movie. So, like, the reactions of everyone, like, they just immediately become friends with him. And even like the mom, when she eventually sees him, like, doesn't really freak out that much, but a little bit. But, you know, they're all fine with this alien living in their house with them.
Yeah, it's super cool. They don't know anything about this thing.
I love the scene, the iconic scene whenever Gertie first meets ET, and like she's in the closet, and then he's just screaming, she's screaming, and then you see ET like running through the fucking
Yeah, with
closet.
his arms up. Some of the movements of him are so fantastic. Like,
It's
even
gets
when she's got
crazy.
him all dressed up as a woman, and it's just,
It's
oh
so
man,
cute, man.
he's wandering around.
It's so great.
E.T., E.T.,
But one of my favorite scenes, which we quickly mentioned, whenever ET is home alone and he just gets in all the shit, cracks a Coors Light, just gets drunk and just watching TV, and then puts together like the remote to like control the TV, and then he creates the phone to talk to his family, and he's just a smart little dude, man.
That communicator actually worked. Like, not for communicating with aliens, but like it
Well,
was actually like it was actually like a functioning piece of equipment that they used with all this sh or that they made with all this shit.
really?
Yeah, they had some engineer guy on crew and he built it. Yeah.
So throughout the movie, we do see like these like government shadows, I guess. And at one point, we do see them like listening in on Mike and Elliot's like phone conversations.
Yeah.
So like, did they know have a feeling that like ET was there?
Well, they have all this equipment that can like they're tracking like footsteps and stuff, like different readings on this machine that they had. So I think they were able to kind of track them down to at least to a localized area. Because at the start, whenever Elliot first finds him, ET takes off running again. So like they probably know he's been there at least once.
Okay, fair enough.
I think anyway.
Because they're kind of like seen like as like the bad guys, I guess, but then they kind of were kind of nice in the beginning. At least the one guy seemed like he was.
Well, like even at the end, all of the medical staff was legitimate medical staff at a local hospital.
Yeah, I read that as well.
Yeah, and they brought them in and they wanted them to they Spielberg was just like, act as if this is a real life patient. So it was very authentic, and I think that's where the compassion comes from with them, because like they're not assholes.
No, they're not.
Like you would think that they would be because they're humans that want to do like experiments on this alien, but like their main focus was keeping ET and Elliot alive.
And like speaking of that scene, like that was the scene that traumatized me as a kid.
Of course.
But then watching it now, I was like, they weren't scary at all. Like I don't know why I thought like I remember like ET just screaming and like going crazy, but like I don't know, they're super nice and compassionate towards Elliot and ET, like the main, I don't know if the main guy is named Keys. I don't know if that's him, the main guy, but he's like has his hands through like the tent or whatever, and he's talking to Elliot and he's like, I'm really glad that you're the first one to meet ET and stuff like that. Like,
He said he came to you, but he also came to me as well because I've been waiting for this day since I was 10 years old. So he just kind of has like that. Like he was just a kid that wanted to meet an alien that kind of grew up without having the opportunity. And now he finally has had that opportunity.
I get the iconic ET phone home, and Theo kept saying ET phone home, and Theo loved the fucking tent scene because he's every time the astronauts showed up, he's like, astronauts,
Yeah.
astronauts.
Man, those guys were the creepiest part of this movie, I think, at this
Yeah,
point.
definitely,
Like, what
definitely.
the? Why are they in full fucking astronaut gear?
I know it says even says NASA on the side with the American flag. I was like, did they just come through from space? Like, what's going on?
Like, are these your hazmat suits in 1982, just full astronaut gear?
So ET does have like some powers. Like we see Elliot cut his finger on the blade, and then ET uses his finger to heal him. He has telekinesis powers as well. He make things float. So, if ET wanted to, he could really cause some fucking damage on Earth, man. I love the Halloween night scene.
Man.
When they dress him up as like the little ghost, and they send Gertie away earlier. We see like a Yoda, and Bettina's like, "Oh, hey Theo, look, it's Yoda," and Theo like was like, "Hey Toto," it's funny.
One thing I love about all this, and I've noticed it, I remember seeing it in The Phantom Menace whenever it first came out, but Spielberg and George Lucas are like really good friends. So George Lucas gave Spielberg permission to have Yoda in this movie, but then in The Phantom Menace, whenever there's like a big meeting, like a galactic meeting, you can see an ET character in that galactic meeting.
Really?
So yeah, it's like it's kind of like they're in the
Okay.
same universe.
That's cool. Yeah, because whenever E.T. comes to his room for the first time, Alice like showed him like all the toys and like the Pez, and then he picks up a few Star Wars character toys, I think.
Yeah, there's Boba Fett and like Lando.
I love because Michael is dressed up as like some guy with like a knife in his head. I love when E.T.'s like put his finger out trying to heal him because he thinks he's hurt.
Ouch,
Yeah.
ouch. I think this whole plot as well, like at on Halloween, I think it was genius
It was
to
very
get him out
smart.
of the house without being seen. Like they send, like
Yeah.
you mentioned, they send Gertie off earlier and she's waiting for them like far away,
Yeah.
like in the forest.
Yeah.
I just think it was a really well thought out plan for these
Yeah.
kids.
And so they're biking away, and then they put E.T. in the basket, wrap him up, and we just get that iconic scene of E.T. making Elliot fly and with the moon with the Amblin Entertainment, like,
Logo,
picture
yeah.
that Spielberg uses now for his movies. And you know, like some of the CGI, like near the end of the movie, whenever they're all flying, like even Tina's like, oh, that looks so real. I'm like, yeah, I know it's 1982, like, you know, this but just man, it's just I don't know. It's weird. Yeah. What else? When all the government people get to the scene, like that was the one scene that I remember as a kid that was like traumatizing. But like we said, like it's not really as terrible as I thought it was. But there's like a shit ton of people there, and like I don't even know if I've ever seen any news cameras or anything in this movie.
No, like you see a big crowd at the end, and Michael's friends are like, oh, like something's going on. Like, and his one friend,
Yeah.
he's like, oh, they're all dead or something like that. But yeah, I think you're right. I don't think you really do see many news crews or any at all. And it's crazy
No.
that, like, this is all just taking place at their house. Like, they've
Yeah.
completely converted their house into this, like, scientific research facility where they're. I don't know, just trying to save their lives, but
Yeah, I was trying to see where this took place. It kind of looked like LA, but then we also see like the giant redwoods. So I think it's like somewhere in California, maybe San Francisco, maybe.
yeah, I'm not sure.
So in the scene, whenever E.T. is dying, so they have them both hooked up beside each other, and they can see that like their like symptoms or whatever, like their charts, like the exact same. And E.T. is like fucking pale as a ghost, like he's dying.
Looks like
How
a
do
baked
they
turd.
he does like a fucking white dog shit.
Yeah, exactly.
How do they separate them? That was what I didn't understand.
I feel like E.T. did it.
You think so?
Because I feel like he knew he was dying and he didn't want Elliot to die. So I think he severed the connection.
Oh, okay.
Because it just kind of happens out of nowhere, right?
It does, yeah.
So yeah, I think that's what it was. And one thing I like too about like this whole movie, the flowers are a theme in this movie. So whenever E.T. gets in their house, he sees there's a pot of dead flowers. So he uses his powers to like revive them, and they become this like nice bouquet of flowers in this flower pot. And then in this scene, we see those flowers just start to die and wilt, and it's just like, oh fuck, like they're almost kind of like a euphemism for him dying.
Yeah, because you see the flowers growing back, and then Gertie freaking can't keep her mouth shut. She has like the flowers, and then she like basically tells the government worker, like, oh yeah, he's alive still. It's like, shut the fuck up.
I love the scene too, like it's really sad and gut-wrenching, but Michael goes into Elliot's closet and he ends up falling asleep. And whenever he wakes up, the flower pot's right beside him. And whenever he wakes up, all the flowers are dead. And he starts freaking out because, as far as he knows, Elliot and E.T. are still connected.
Yeah.
So he freaks out thinking that Elliot is dead as well.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Cause I was wondering, because like the main friendship, like obviously Elliot cares more for ET because he found him, he's with him longer, and that like I love the scene whenever the Michael first meets him, because Elliot keeps telling him he's a goblin, and then Michael comes in, is like all talking, you know, big brother,
Yeah.
and then sees him, is like can't talk at all.
He's like, what the
But
fuck?
that makes sense that he thought his brother was dead. So yeah, they put ET in like this like ice box thing, and then Elliot closes the hatch, and you see like kind of the red glow, and then the getaway in the van. I love too because Michael always backs his mother's car down the driveway, which is so funny. Which would never happen in these days.
No.
But yeah, he's like in the driver's seat, and some guy's like there. He's like, "Who are you?" He's like, "I don't know." Mike's
I'm
like, "What am
driving.
I?" He's like, "What do I do?" And Elliot's like, "Just drive." He's like, "I've never driven forward before." So they get the fuck out of there. They call their friends, tell them to meet them at the park with all their bikes, and then we get this like awesome scene that reminded me of fucking Three Ninjas, whenever they're biking through all the construction site and stuff, and then they're going down the road, and the cops pull up, and they got the fucking shotguns out, and then ET like flies them all up out of there, and yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
And then we get the ending of the movie. The spaceship is here, and yeah, pretty tearful goodbye. You know, Elliot's saying goodbye to them all, and he takes the flower pot with him, and yeah.
The one part of this that fucking almost got me, man. ET says, come. And then
Yeah.
Elliot starts crying and he goes, stay. And I was like, oh man, that's so
Yeah,
fucking
I know.
gut wrenching. It's like,
Yeah.
fuck. Because like
Yeah.
Elliot doesn't really have any friends of his own. He's always kind of a tag along with Michael and his friends. So I feel like this was his first like real true friend.
Definitely. Yeah.
And it was just so fucking gut-wrenching. And like they went through so much together in the last like 24 hours where like
Yeah.
they thought they were gonna die together, and then Elliot was fine, and then he thought ET was gonna die, and then he's happy for him because he gets to go home, but at the same time, like he just lost his best friend at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, anything else?
Yeah, something really quick. The ending of this movie was actually a lot different originally.
Oh, really?
I just don't know why I closed IMDb. So the actor who played Michael, Robert McNaughton, he was in an interview and he had said, where the fuck is it? Anyways, I can't find it. Long story short, so the way that the movie was going to end, like this was going to happen, like ET was going to go home and everything. And then it was gonna do like a wraparound scene from the beginning, and all of them are gonna be playing Dungeons and Dragons at their house, like at the kitchen table, like how they were at the beginning. But how Elliot wanted to be part of that game, they've now added him into it, and he's actually the dungeon master. So he finally gets that inclusion that he's always wanted, and then it kind of pans out to outside and on the roof, the communicator's up there, and the communicator's like flashing and like moving around and stuff. So it's like ET's still in communication with them. And apparently they filmed the entire scene and everything like that, and then they ended up scrapping it before the movie came out. So I think I like this ending better.
Yeah, me too.
Just knowing that Spielberg had like that thought process that ET is still communicating with them was kind of cool.
Why do you think this movie made so much money in when it came out?
Yeah, because this was the most profitable movie of all time until Jurassic Park came out, which is also Spielberg. I just think it's such a great feel-good movie. It had an incredible theatrical run. Spielberg actually didn't want it to release on physical media. He
Really?
refused it, and like people didn't get this movie on VHS until 1988, so 6 years later. He said he wanted this movie to be a family experience where people get that enjoyment of leaving their house and going to the movie theater to watch it and like having that
Yeah.
excitement. So I think that's part and partial with it, but it's such a different movie. It's a very different coming of age story. We mentioned before, like the alien design was so much different, and I feel like it just had mass amounts of charm to it, where people just wanted to go and watch this movie.
Do you think also like the animatronics and like kind of the special effects kind of had something to do with it? Because like in Jaws, yeah, we see it's a animatronic shark and stuff like that. And then Close Encounters, not too much, you know, Raiders came out, and then this movie. And yeah, I think just the special effects and the practical effects, and like you said, yeah, just one of those feel good movies.
And this is like his first true family movie. Like the other ones before, like we said, like they're kind of tailored towards adults, but the whole family can really enjoy them. I feel like this is one that was really sort of tailored for kids to want to go to watch, that would like drag their parents saying like, "I want to watch this movie." And I mean, it was good enough back then that families probably went multiple times to see it.
Anything else?
No, I'm good.
Cool.
Wasn't sure.
Yeah, I'm just looking through some other stuff, but yeah. Alrighty, well, that's the way the Reese's Pieces crumble.
All right, you haven't watched this movie in at least 30 years, we'll say. How do you rate it now?
Listen, it's a very well-made movie. Well, I liked it a lot. I'm giving it a 4 to 5. I mean, what can I say about it? Like, there's nothing really bad about the movie. It's just like, it's not one that I'm gonna go back to like a ton. Just, you know, the special effects, practical effects are amazing. I think the acting is like good for what it is. Like, you know, the kid acting is good. The score and soundtrack is amazing. John Williams won an Oscar for this score. It's 2 hours long, but it doesn't feel like a 2 hour movie at all.
No.
Very fast paced. I love the story. So 4 to 5, just a I mean iconic movie, you know.
Okay.
How about you?
I'm just trying to. Sorry. This is a 5 out of 5 for me. This movie,
Fair enough.
I mean, I have the nostalgia factor in my corner, whereas you don't so much. Like this movie's the epitome of my childhood. I watched it so many times when I was a kid. I've continued to watch it throughout my adult years. I can't even tell you how many times I've seen this movie.
Fair.
I love everything about it, from like fucking opening credits to closing credits. John Williams is an absolute musical genius, and this movie and many of his other movies that he's composed are proof of that. I think the child actors in this are really good. I think Drew Barrymore did an amazing job as a very young child. She even ad-libbed some of her lines, and they made it to the movie, and they worked out perfectly for the scene. So I think she did an awesome job. And like her and Henry Thomas, they grew up to be pretty well-known actors. So I feel like this movie really kind of helped them. And I don't know, they kind of went on the right path, whereas some of the other child actors in this one, they didn't really take off, but
No.
these two definitely did. I've already talked about it, but I have in my review, like I think E.T.'s design was amazing and iconic. Like the story and script were really heartfelt at times, gut-wrenching at others, but like it all kind of wrapped up perfectly. So yeah, it's a 5 out of 5 for me.
Nice.
All right, you guys know our scores. We'll head on over to Rotten Tomatoes and see what they scored it. The critics' consensus: playing as both an exciting sci-fi adventure and a remarkable portrait of childhood, Steven Spielberg's touching tale of a homesick alien remains a piece of movie magic for young and old. Based on that, what do you think the critics scored it?
Like 96%.
Close. This might be our highest rated movie. 99%
Damn.
on 149 reviews and an average score of 9.5 out of 10. The audience score makes me so upset. 72%
Yeah.
on 250,000 ratings and an average score of 3.5 out of 5, or a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, it's low.
I think it's too low.
Yeah. Letterboxd has a 3.8 out of 5 on 2.73 million watches. DC, sure, a ton of people have watched this. Our buddy Alan gave it a 3. Jess gave it a 5. Anthony gave it a 5. So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it.
All right. Cool beans.
Yes, sir.
All right. We're gonna be doing another blind ranking.
Alrighty.
There might be some tough ones for this. Okay. So we talked about how much of a genius John Williams is with his scores.
Yes.
Him and Spielberg have worked together a lot.
Yes.
Like a lot, a lot. So you're going to be blind ranking five director composer duos.
Okay, I like this.
So I will give you the directing and the director and composer duo,
Oh my God.
and then I'll rhyme off some movies that they've done together.
This is going to be probably the hardest one.
It might be tough. I'm going to start it off. I'll start it off easy for you.
Okay.
John Carpenter and
Yeah.
John Carpenter. Do you want his movies?
I mean, sure, but yeah, I already.
So he composed Halloween, The Fog, Escape from New York, Christine, Big Trouble in Little China, They Live, In the Mouth of Madness, and Vampires.
You see, the thing with John Carpenter, very talented, but the only one of those theme songs or scores that is memorable to me is Halloween. Other ones, I couldn't even tell you a note from any of those movies.
Okay, that's fair.
So for that reason, I gotta go 5.
Okay. All right. This is a horror podcast. You might get shredded.
That's okay.
All right. We're gonna kick it up a notch a little bit here.
Yeah.
Alfred Hitchcock and Bernard Herrmann.
Ooh.
So they worked together on The Trouble with Harry, The Man Who Knew Too Much, Vertigo, North by Northwest, Psycho, The Birds, and Marnie.
Can I ask a question without spoiling the other ones?
Possibly.
Are these all horror-based composers?
No.
Okay. I'll go 3 because Hitchcock is known for being the master of suspense. But I also think that the composer in those movies that I've seen has a lot to do with it as well.
That's true.
So I'll go 3.
All right. Now is where you're going to have trouble.
Yes.
We're going to do Steven Spielberg and John Williams. They've worked together on Jaws, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Raiders of the Lost Ark, E.T., Jurassic Park, Schindler's List, Saving Private Ryan, Catch Me If You Can, War Horse, and The Fabelmans.
I'll go 2 here.
Two. All right. Next one. Tim Burton and Danny Elfman.
Oh my God.
They've worked together on Beetlejuice, Batman from 1989, Edward Scissorhands, Batman Returns, Mars Attacks, Sleepy Hollow, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and The Corpse Bride, and they've worked together on 17 or 18 movies. I just narrowed it down to eight.
Yeah.
So
You know, I was going to put that number one, but I'm gonna s save my number one for see. You're gonna leave someone off this list that's gonna make me very upset. And I feel like the Danny Elfman and Tim Burton scores are all very similar. Like they all kind of sound the same to me a
that's
bit.
fair. Yeah.
So I'll put them at four.
Four. Okay. So you're number one, and I don't think you're going to be upset. Christopher Nolan and Hans Zimmer.
Yes.
They worked together on Batman Begins, The Dark Knight, The Dark Knight Rises, Inception, Interstellar, and Dunkirk. You okay with that?
I'm okay with that. A bit of a hot take. I don't know if it's a hot take. I think that Christopher Nolan and Ludvig Göransson will eventually reign supreme as the greatest duo of all
Okay.
time.
So you think they're going to continue working together?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think Ludwig is going to win his third Oscar this year with The Odyssey.
If The Odyssey doesn't win, then like I have no faith in the Oscars anymore.
So, yeah, I'm happy
All
with
right.
that list.
Nice. I wasn't sure how the Tim Burton and Danny Elfman would go, because I know you're a big Tim Burton fan.
I just think with Nolan and like John Williams and Hans Zimmer and Louis Gornson, like I can sit and listen to those soundtracks like on iTunes or in the car or whatever,
Yeah.
and each track is different.
Yeah, that's true.
Whereas like kind of like Tim Burton and like John Carpenter, like they all kind of the same kind of tone, I guess.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right.
Cool. You ready for the scare section?
Yes, sir.
Right. How did you rate the scares in this movie as an adult?
I'll go with like, I'll say 1 out of 10. Like, I was gonna say
Okay.
2, but it's not really that scary at all. Like, the creepiest part to me was his little fucking fingers and hands that kept poking up and grabbing trees and branches and picking up Reese's pieces. Like,
Yeah.
yeah. So,
Right.
I'll go 1 out of 10.
Creepiest character.
I'm trying to think of anyone else other than E.T. himself. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be E.T. I mean,
Okay.
you don't see all the other aliens like him look the same that we could see. So, like, you know, something like they had like a keen alien or something that looked a bit different. But yeah. So, I'll go with that.
Okay. And childhood trauma.
What's that question again? If
Like how you would like scariness for a child.
right. Well,
You...
my 2.5-year-old was not scared at all, but he may just be a freak. I don't know. For me as a kid, I thought it was terrifying. I thought ET was creepy. So, like, I'll say like 3.
Oh,
I
okay.
guess. Yeah, I don't know.
All right. That's
My
a lot
mind has
lower.
changed about this movie,
All right, that's
for
fair.
sure. How about you?
My scare rating, I went with a 2. I just said like there's a couple times where ET does look creepy. I agree with you. His hand stuff is a little creepy. When he looks like a white dog turd at the end, I thought that it could have some imagery that could be burned into your head. But yeah, overall, it's not a scary movie at all. Character, I said the random ass astronaut guys that show up at the house, just
Yeah.
like the way that it happens, because like you got one guy that's fucking climbing in through their living room window and like they're opening the doors and like there's like these bright lights in behind them and you can just see the silhouette of this fucking
Yeah.
astronaut coming into their house. So it's just, I don't know, it was so weird, but
Yeah.
it was kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Childhood trauma, I gave it a 4. Like, I thought that was low, but then you went lower. But yeah, I don't know. Like, my kids weren't too bad with it either, so I guess it's not as scary as what people maybe once thought. And like Sarah was kind of like you, like she refused to watch it, and she watched a little bit of it with me the other night whenever I was finishing it off. So like it definitely freaked her out as a kid as well. So I don't know. I guess a four.
Okay. It is
All right.
surprising to hear like three people like near, like close to me like thought this was scary as a kid too. So it's like
That's true,
it must
yeah.
be a common thing, right? So
Yeah, I think it was for sure. It was just different.
yeah.
All right. Well, we can wrap this one up.
Yes, sir.
And our next movie is my pick, and I think it's going to be a very different vibe. And we're going to do The Dark Crystal, which
Hell
is
yeah.
another Jim Henson movie.
Yeah.
If you thought Labyrinth was creepy, buckle up. Because this movie should not have been shown to children, in my opinion.
I don't think I've seen this movie, so
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah. But yeah, in the meantime, if you guys want to catch us on social media, you can find us at A Podcast on Elm Street on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. If you click the link in our bio on Instagram, you'll find links to our T Public account where we have our merch. There's links to our Patreon account if you wish to support the podcast that way. And there's links to our individual Letterboxd accounts, our Discord server, and anywhere that you can listen to us. Thanks again for checking this one out. We only have a few more of these movies to go. Well,
Yes, sir.
two more actually. So,
Yeah.
all right.
Cool. Well, talk to you guys in a couple weeks.
Bye.